Welcome to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. It's our weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear Dayton Youth Radio, and Bill Felker has this week's Port Wills Almanac. Later in the program, you'll hear about a great event taking place in the village of Clifton next week where history will come to life. Up first, a ninth civil lawsuit has been levied against the Montgomery County Jail, this time by a former inmate. It's the latest in a series of complaints against the facility for inmate mistreatment. This most recent lawsuit alleges a corrections officer attacked the inmate inside a cell. Dayton Daily News investigative reporter Josh Schweigert tells us the officer involved in the alleged incident has since been let go, but for reasons the officer has contested, were racially motivated. Josh, thanks for speaking with us today. Tell us a little bit about the circumstances surrounding this latest case.
Yeah, the inmate's name is Darryl Wallace, and essentially he was in a couple years ago, and while he was in the county jail, he had issues with his hot water and complained about the hot water. And there's video, we have it on our website, of an altercation that ensued between himself and a corrections officer named Jared Campbell. Allegedly, Campbell took his handcuffs and used them as like brass knuckles during the fight. It's a pretty dramatic altercation that took place, and Wallace says he claims he suffered some serious lasting damage from it. Afterwards, there was an internal affairs investigation. Campbell was investigated and found to have not followed proper procedure in the incident. He was disciplined, and the sheriff even has said that he pursued charges against Campbell and referred it all the way to prosecution, and the prosecutors denied charges. Sheriff Plummer had previously said, look, this is how aggressively I deal with use of force cases, is that I've even recommended my own corrections officers for prosecution when I think something happened. Plummer made this case previously, and then subsequently, this is a case that's yet another lawsuit that the Plummer's office is dealing with.
So it looks like Darryl Wallace could have filed this suit at any time, or maybe he's just become aware of his rights to file that suit?
Yeah, there's a few things at hand. For one, he was in prison for a while. He was sentenced for a weapons charge, and he got out this year. So I don't know if that was a factor. I mean, why he filed it when he did is obviously their discretion. Sheriff Plummer certainly believes or has said that sort of a bandwagon fueled by media reports that these attorneys are sort of piling on with very numerous lawsuits, and that's why there's this deluge that they're dealing with of lawsuits. Plummer has suggested that the problem is sort of self-perpetuating and blames these attorneys especially.
All right. And where do we stand with the previous eight civil lawsuits against the Montgomery County Jail?
They're all open. I mean, the wheels of justice move slow. They're grinding through the courts, most of them in federal court. We've done a roundup, and I mean, they're dealing with motions and counter motions, and they're proceeding. I mean, one thing that has sort of grown out of this is the oversight committee that the sheriff's office agreed to, along with the county commissioners and a few other local entities, has started meeting and talking about what its responsibility should be in handling these issues. They had a meeting. I know a reporter, Corey Froelich, covered it, and there was some discussion about what their responsibility should be. I don't think it's quite yet defined how they're going to handle it, whether they're going to be reviewing policies and procedures or actually taking complaints and investigating them, what sort of oversight mechanism they're going to have. But that group, it has been established and has started meeting, and we'll be watching to see what the scope of their jurisdiction is.
Okay, so all that is still being hammered out. Any other updates on this situation?
The corrections officer, Jared Campbell, was terminated ultimately. He was disciplined for the use of force incident. Subsequently, he got in trouble for statements he'd made. Jared Campbell's contention is that he was fired for bringing up issues that he believed were race-related within the sheriff's office. And he has made comments to the Dayton Daily News and other media outlets and to the sheriff and internally made complaints against the sheriff. And he believes that that's why he was ultimately terminated. It's an issue that the sheriff's office is still dealing with and has been now for a couple of years, going back to the text messaging issue from a couple of years ago. That is his perspective, Jared Campbell's perspective on the whole thing.
Josh Schweigert with Dayton Daily News. Thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Across the country, many young people are leaving rural communities and heading to cities in search of opportunity. It's a migration trend that's generations old, and communities in Appalachia are especially affected by this shrinking population. In 2015, census data shows West Virginia lost population faster than any other state, due in part to the declining coal industry and the exodus of young people. On this edition of WISO Weekend, we bring you a story from West Virginia Public Broadcasting series, The Struggle to Stay. The series follows a group of young people wrestling with the decision of whether to leave home. And today, we hear about military veteran Mark Combs. West Virginia Public Broadcasting reporter Glynis Board says Mark's personal demons and dreams of working in the theater contributed to his decision to leave Appalachia.
In the summer of 2016, Mark Combs was cast in a professional production of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet in Morgantown, West Virginia. He was fresh out of college with a degree in fine arts. This was his first professional gig as an actor. This would be his last performance in his home state of West Virginia. And when we met up on closing night, he probably should have been nervous, or maybe on top of the world, but Mark had just received terrible news.
You know, I lost one of my best friends last night to suicide. And he was in the United States Army. He was in the infantry like I was.
The loss of his friend, Tyler Burroughs, is especially tragic because, you see, Mark, who is no stranger to suicidal thoughts, just dedicated the last year of his life to raising awareness about the ongoing epidemic of vet suicide in the United States. He even hosted and co-produced the West Virginia Public Broadcasting television special called Still Taking Casualties.
I want to put a face on these statistics. I personally have known over a dozen veterans who have killed themselves. I'm tired of picking up the phone and hearing about another buddy.
I mean, it's the first friend I've lost in a while, probably about 10 months to it. And it's tough. It never gets any easier.
Mark Combs grew up bouncing around geographically between southern West Virginia, North, and South Carolina. He lost his parents early. To follow in his grandfather's footsteps, he joined the service. But 15 months in Iraq left him with several traumatic brain injuries. These came because of exposure to blasts from improvised explosive devices, or IEDs. In 2009, he was discharged because of his injuries and diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Part of that disorder means he copes with recurring nightmares about being back in the war.
In the beginning, it was nothing but firefights and rocket attacks and mortar attacks and seeing IEDs blow up my friends and IEDs hitting me. But they progressed. In my mind, I was really thinking about certain things, you know, the aspects of really taking another human being's life. And it really started to bother me because that was one thing that I was known for. That was like everybody knew who I was in the battalion because I did that. And I did it more than anybody else. My dreams became just having to watch those people die over and over and over again. And that's pretty much what it is even to this day.
During his college career, Mark discovered a powerful new coping mechanism that changed the course of his life and was the driving force in his struggle to stay.
Honestly, theater saved my life. I hadn't been passionate about anything since being out of the Army, and I was still just kind of wandering around and just, you know, dragging my feet. But I finally found something that I love to do, and I mean, it was very therapeutic, and to get to do the things that you do on stage, and it's this beautiful art form. And it did, it pulled me out from underneath a rock.
After the final performance of Romeo and Juliet, while his castmates celebrated in the lobby, Mark and I sat down in the now empty theater.
It may have actually been the most difficult performance I've ever done.
You know, there's a couple times I stepped into the wings and just kind of cried because I almost didn't want to be out there. But, you know, there's that saying, the show must go on. And, you know, I know if it had been somebody else and my buddy Tyler was here, he would have been there consoling me, but he also would have told me, you know, go do what you got to do. And, I mean, it's basically all I could hear in my head all night. Got a funeral to go to this week, and then try to continue to work, save up a little bit more money before leaving for California at the end of August.
After a few years of weighing his options, Mark decided West Virginia didn't have a healthy enough economy that would allow him to survive and thrive pursuing a career in the arts.
I couldn't imagine doing anything else. I will never... I mean, if I have to like work a job, you know, at a bar or anything like that to help support, you know, get me from one job in the theater to the next acting job, yeah, I'll do that, but I can't imagine pursuing any other career ever.
Many of his theater friends moved either to New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles to chase their theatrical dreams. Mark wanted to escape cold winters, so he decided it was California or bust.
West Virginia is a really depressing place when you really get to think about it, especially, you know, if you're a young person who is looking to start a career.
Mark partially blames political leaders for not creating more economic opportunities for young people.
And the more you see in the news, it's like they're trying to make it worse. State government passes these bills that it's like they don't care about us. They care about coal and oil and gas, which are just robbing us blind and, you know, destroying the environment. And it just seems to me like they don't care about the younger generations or the generations to come. I mean, I'd love to be able to stay here. I do love this state, and you know, the people are great, but it's just dying. And you know, if you want to succeed, you got to leave.
A few nights before leaving, his apartment is stripped. He's all packed.
It is a little scary. There is a definite feeling of fear that I'm leaving my home and the things that I've grown used to. But there's really nothing for me to do here. So I kind of really have to leave here. It's like I don't know what will happen in California, but I know what will happen if I stay here. And one is definitely more terrifying than the other. Three days from now, I'll be halfway across the country.
So, Mark set out with a car full of California dreams and expectations that were, well, destined to be smashed to pieces, and quickly. Does he make it to California? That's next time.
That story was produced by West Virginia Public Broadcasting. You can hear more of the Struggle to Stay series at wvpublic.org or by subscribing to the Inside Appalachia podcast. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. Thanks for joining us. Support for this program comes from listeners like you and Antioch College, where environmental science courses are coupled with real-life applications. At Antioch, classroom learning is the foundation, not the finish. Transfer applications for fall of 2017 are at antiochcollege.edu. Thank you. The Village of Clifton will host Ohio Chautauqua from June 13th through the 17th. The event brings history to life for audiences. And to find out how that's done, we spoke with Clifton Village Mayor Alex Beery.
Ohio Chautauqua is a living history tour, which means it is actors slash scholars that explore history in a really unique way of performance art. So it's basically combines theater with the historical scholarship of getting into the character and figuring out who they are and what they're talking about and coming up with a really compelling story and then performing it on stage. And then there's an audience participation feature to the program after that, and they interact with the audience in character.
Tell us about the actors who bring these historic figures to life.
Well, they come from all over the country. Many of them are in academia. Some of them are professors that are off for the summer. Others do this full-time as a living. And the whole production is produced and created by the Ohio Humanities. And the Ohio Humanities is the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. So they have some backing to put this together, but they reach out to different host cities, towns and villages throughout Ohio, and either four or five. And then those towns or villages have to shoulder getting everything ready for the production, and then they bring in a big top tent, set it up on site, and produce the show. So it's an interesting combination kind of efforts to bring it all together.
You've got a lot of interesting famous people that you're focusing on this year, including Madame Curie and Mary Shelley, the author, and Theodore Roosevelt. Let's kind of go through the events and how this is all going to run.
So opening night is Madame Curie on June 13th, that's Tuesday, followed by Chief Cornstalk on Wednesday, June 14th, Theodore Roosevelt, Thursday, June 15th, Mary Shelley on Friday, June 16th, and then wrapping up the week with Diane Fossey on Saturday, June 17th. They'll be under a big top tent, like an old-timey circus tent, and this big top is huge. It seats 500 people, and it'll be set up just behind the schoolhouse in downtown Clifton off of Clay and 343. And the evening performances actually begin at 6:30. We have a live music that is a warm-up act for each of the performers. And what we do with the music is we try to tie it in to a theme. So we have a very interesting, eclectic group of musicians, everyone from the chief harpist of the Dayton Philharmonic to Bud Eagle Wolf, who will be playing Native American flute music on flutes that he makes himself. And that'll be for Chief Cornstalk on Wednesday.
And among all of this, you not only have the evening performances, but you've got programs for adults and programs for youth throughout the day. Tell people where they can get the full rundown on everything that's taking place.
Right. Well, for more information, you can visit villageofclifton.com, or you can visit the Ohio Humanities website, which is ohiohumanities.org. And the ohiohumanities.org website actually has the full program for Clifton, which includes both the daytime programs that you mentioned, and the evening performances, as well as a wealth of material for anyone that wants to read into a little background on the characters or some of what the Ohio Humanities does in this production and in other productions.
Alex Beery is the mayor of the Village of Clifton. Ohio Chautauqua runs June 13th through the 17th. Alex, thanks for your time and information today.
Well, thank you very much, Jerry. It's a pleasure to be here.
This week on Dayton Youth Radio, we have a story from the David H. Ponens Career Technology Center about a teenager's family ties. Here's project manager Basim Blunt.
Our siblings are our first relationships in life. Youth Radio producer Christopher Patchiquin has been contemplating his relationship with his younger brother Marcus.
My story is about brotherly bonds. I live with my mom, stepdad, two sisters, one of my best friends, my cousin, a stepbrother, two chinchillas, a cat, and my stepsister's boyfriend. And oh yeah, my brother, Marcus. Me and my brother Marcus used to be really tight. I remember us playing football together for the Fairborn Weehawks, and then the Dayton Vikings.
Do you have any, like, moments with us together that's, like, your favorite?
Football. And that's one thing we both had in common, is, like, we would both be on the same football team and we would do pretty good because we had each other.
We used to play together all the way from kindergarten till fifth grade. And every day at practice, the coach made us run laps. But one day, practice didn't go so well, so he made us run extra. Everyone on the team was exhausted. Nobody was allowed to go home till the last one was done running. When I finished, I noticed my brother Marcus was the last one running all by himself. He looked very tired and wanting to quit. I crossed the field and caught up to him and helped him finish his lap. We were so tired, the only thing we wanted to do was go into our mom's car and go home. Things aren't like that now. We fight all the time. We usually fight over the TV, in some cases, our little brother Bryce. There have been multiple times when our parents had to leave home for work. I was the oldest in the house, so naturally, they left me in charge. So then, the day will go on just fine. Then my brother will act up, and I'll tell him to go to his room or chill out. That's when he gets more mad and tells me, I don't have to listen. You're not my dad or my mom. That makes me upset because he was in the same room when they told us who was in charge. So then he starts to throw stuff and retaliate, and then I go after him. We would punch, kick, tackle each other. Now my brother is a big guy, and I still sometimes have to hold him down and tell him to go to his room. He doesn't like it. He stomps all the way to his room, pushing things down.
So how do you feel our relationship is so far? You don't think there's a problem with us getting into fights all the time?
Yeah, it's annoying.
It's annoying? Why is it annoying? What do I do? What am I doing wrong?
It's not that you're doing it wrong. It's like the fact that you get really competitive and it's to the point where it gets annoying whenever we try to fight the other.
Sometimes we'll be talking and you'll think I'm like yelling at you, but what if you didn't have a bigger brother? Think about everything that you've ever done and think about how much things would have changed if your bigger brother wasn't there to try to help you.
Or try to help just a little bit too much. I don't mind getting help from you or anyone. It's just I'm trying to do it by myself.
We never spend time together. We have separate rooms. I have my own room while he shares one with our stepbrother, Bryce. We don't see eye to eye on some views. I feel like I'm losing a part of him. I hate these times. I don't feel like we are the same anymore.
That was a story entitled Brotherly Love, written and produced by Christopher Patricklin, a graduate from Ponent CTC. Special thanks to Joanne Viscup. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
To hear more Dayton Youth Radio stories, visit our website, wyso.org, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Armott Boyer Charitable Trust, Fifth Third Bank trustee.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the second week of early summer, the third week of the strawberry and raspberry moon. When I walked the Camino de Santiago in northern Spain a few months ago, I relearned old lessons, lessons of motion and feeling. I hiked down country roads and byways, my face in the chilly wind, the weight of my pack on my shoulders and lower back, my legs pulling me along, the sky clearest, blue, no clouds, mile after mile, and the sun warming my neck. All the time I was heading west, toward what is called the end of the world, in Finisterre, the last outcropping of Europe. Along the dirt path were wild, large, yellow primroses, whispering streams of runoff from the succulent fields, waysides of violet and gold ground cover bloom, grass so fresh. Nothing around me old or dying, warbling birds all the way. Hills, pale green with early leaves, pastures deep green, stone walls speckled with heavy moss, plums and apples in bloom. And from the early afternoons towards evening, I saw so many butterflies, cabbage whites and sulfurs and blues and fritillaries, many in randori play and mating. And I was aware, too, of the correspondence of that environment with the environment of southwestern Ohio, where I live. The distance of more than 4,000 miles reduced to immediate sight and touch and sound and fragrance. Balanced in my senses, the two worlds did not seem different or similar or the same or separate. Neither one was home and neither one was foreign. Linked by observations and associations, they were simply where I was, where I was going, and who I was. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the third week of early summer. In the meantime, feel where you are, and therefore who you are.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at wyso.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next Sunday morning. Coming up next on WYSO, it's The Book Nook with Vic McInnes.
This is Radio Basin, inviting you to celebrate Father's Day at the Yellow Cab Building in Dayton. It's our WYSO Listener Appreciation Party. There'll be craft beers and delicious treats from Whole Foods. I'll be spinning some 45s to bring out your inner goofologist, baby.
Hey, that's not a word.
Sunday, June 18th at 7 p.m. It's the WYSO Listener Appreciation Party.
Every few blocks in Birmingham, you find history.
We were seemingly not welcome to a lot of the white establishments, and it was a high-class place that blacks could come. This was the A.G. Gaston Motel.
Bishop Calvin Woods tells us the story as we're live from the Lyric Theater in Birmingham, Saturday, on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Coming up this morning starting at 8 on 91.3 WYSO.